Okay, so it's 9 o'clock, so I can think we can start. Last day of ApacheCon. Welcome to the session about stream processing with Kafka Streams and KSQL. And the main idea is really to compare these two solutions, and also if you know other stream processing engines like Flink or Spark Streaming, for example, you will probably understand where is the differences after this talk. And I will also cover this a little bit in more detail. So this is the third of four talks about Kafka on this event by me, and this one is really about processing the data at scale with stream processing. So very contrary for other topics about integration with Kafka or compared to ETL tools, what is my talk after this one? So here it's about processing data with Kafka. So I hope everybody in the room knows Kafka. Who knows Kafka already? Everybody? Yeah. Okay, good. I don't do an introduction to Kafka here. I just want to mention on two slides, so that Kafka was originated at LinkedIn 10 years ago, as you probably know, for processing data at large scale. But today it's really much more. So today it's really more used as a streaming platform for many, many different use cases. And the main point which I want to discuss here is not the core of Kafka, so the messaging and storage layer, but really that Kafka, and that's what already many people don't know when they think about Kafka, is it's more than a messaging system. So it includes Kafka Connect for integration and Kafka Streams for stream processing. And that's really important because it's part of the Apache Kafka project, and it supports stream processing natively on top of Kafka, and that can be huge depending on what you want to do and what your use case and project is. So when I talk about stream processing, it's also important to understand what I mean with that. So it really means continuously process the events. That's a very different approach than what you, for example, know from request response when you have web services with SOAP or REST or something like connecting to a database with SQL and get a response back. So here instead we really want to continuously process the data. That's a completely new paradigm for many people, and I see many people really struggle with thinking about that the right way, and that's why it's really the adoption of Kafka Streams and KSQL is really hard, also like Spark Streaming and Flink, because people need to completely rethink how they build applications with that. But therefore they get all of the benefits of it by continuously processing the data while it's hot and in motion. And for Kafka, you have two Kafka native options. And Kafka native really means that you don't need another big data cluster. You will see this in more detail during this talk, how this differs, for example, from Flink or Spark. But the point is really that all is managed under the hood by Kafka. So all the things you know from Kafka, like high throughput, replication factor, Kafka topics, all these kind of things, the same is true for Kafka Streams and KSQL, because they use Kafka under the hood. It's Kafka only as big cluster which you manage. And therefore, why are there two different options? So Kafka Streams is part of the Apache project of Kafka. So that's a Java library where you do coding. And that's totally fine, and you can do very complex things with that. But for many other people, it's too hard to do that. And especially for simpler use cases, it's simply too much effort for many people, especially if you're not a core Java or Scala developer. And therefore, with KSQL, you can do many things much easier. Especially for people which are not from the Java background, but also even for Java developers, often this might be much simpler. And therefore, what I will cover today is really where is KSQL and Kafka Streams similar to each other? Because KSQL is just a wrapper around Kafka Streams. It's using the same engine under the hood. But on the other side, also, where is the differences between when to use which one? And also, as I said, I will cover how it's then different from Flink or Spark. So the first thing what's important to understand is both are, in the end, clients to Kafka. So both Kafka Streams and KSQL, it's under the hood. It's Kafka producers and consumers in one application, and a lot of great logic behind that, which is implemented for you so that you don't have to implement it. So it's really just clients like all the others available, like Java or Go or Python, but it's a smarter one because they are really built for stream processing. It's not just a consumer or producer where you build all the logic by yourself or use another tool for that, but it's providing a lot of other features for you out of the box. Before I cover more the technical details about both, let's think about the use cases. So as I said before, it's sometimes really hard to think about what is stream processing and when do you use it. But the idea is really to continuously process the data, which is a huge advantage, especially if you want to build scalable real-time applications. And therefore, here are just a few examples. The main point is really it can be used for very simple things, like just streaming ETL for filtering or transformations, enrichments. But it can also be used for very powerful things. So we have customers which use Kafka Streams, for example, for building instant payment applications. So as you will see later through this talk, as soon as you build a Java application as a Kafka client, in 90% of use cases, you should use Kafka Streams instead of the normal Kafka Java library. Because it has a lot of benefits out of the box, but it's also just a library. It's not much more complexity for you or overhead. And so here are a few examples, and that's really just examples. So, but one thing what you can do, you can get streams into Kafka. So in this case, it's change data capture from a database. But the point is it's streaming data which is coming into Kafka. And then you can continuously process the data with Kafka Streams or KSQL. And then send it to another Kafka topic, and then anyone else can consume it. So that's the beauty of Kafka. Everything is decoupled from each other. In all these examples here, it's just one consumer, but in the normal use case, often you have different consumers for the data. But what's important to understand, both Kafka Streams and KSQL, they are not running on the server. They are clients, so they consume from Kafka topics, and typically they also send data back to Kafka topics. That's you don't have to do that. You can also send directly from such an application to another system. But a best practice is to really decouple things and send it back to another Kafka topic and from there consume it from somewhere else. It's typically not a good idea to use the Kafka Streams application and directly write into a database for things like what do you do in case of error handling and how do you debug all these systems. It's not really the overhead is not a problem if you have one more Kafka topic, but it's decoupled and it's really better for observability, for scalability, and for monitoring. Another example here, now here, you have two streams coming into Kafka and you join them. So you can not just do simple stateless things, but you can also combine different information and process this continuously. And here you can also use things like late arriving data. So you cannot expect that both these streams send the data in at the same time. So you can also do things like sliding windows or so where you wait for 60 minutes or whatever and wait and if the other data also comes in to do a join on that. And that's also very important. That's normal stream processing in the end, right? So you know the same from Flink or Spark streaming or so. And the other big point, and that's what I will also cover in a little bit more detail in the technical overview later, is that while Kafka is for streaming data, it also has the concept of tables. So in this example, you have streaming data from the car on the top left side, but you also have more static data from a database which you keep in a Kafka topic. And I will cover that in more detail later. But the point is, it's not just for streaming data, but you can also combine streaming data with table data, what you might typically store in an Oracle database, like customer information, which does not change often, like the email address, the phone number. That's a table, not a stream. But Kafka Streams and KSQL also have this concept. And this sounds a little bit strange in the beginning, but I will cover that in a few minutes, how that looks from a technical perspective. But the result of that is that for many use cases, not for all, but for many, if you build a microservice, you don't need an additional database because you can use the table concept. And if you think about things like scalability and operations, if you have just this application to manage, it's much easier to manage this application and another database behind that. So here's a few things which are true for both Kafka Streams and KSQL. So both are fully supported, of course, and all you need is Kafka. That's really a big thing. You don't need another database. You don't need another big data cluster to manage. It's in the end all the Kafka cluster which stores all the information for you in Kafka topics. It runs everywhere at scale and Elastic. I will cover that in more detail. And it's all the common Kafka security integration and so on. So it's really Kafka under the hood. What you know from Kafka, you can also do with KSQL and Kafka Streams because it's just wrapper around the core Kafka concepts. And therefore, the big point, and that's what many people do not understand when I show a first demo of that, I get always the question, where is this stuff running? And a very important concept of Kafka is the broker is a dump thing. So the broker doesn't do the logic. It's separated from it and excluded the clients. And also the Kafka Streams and KSQL clients are not running on the broker. It's a different Java process. You can run it on the same node, on the same hardware. Typically, it's not recommended, but you can do that. For example, in my demo on the laptop in a minute, I will do it. But in production system, it's typically separated in different Docker containers or VMs or whatever. And therefore, you deploy each application independently. It's just a Kafka client. And from the perspective of what's different, of course, here you see that pretty easy. KSQL, you write SQL commands. So it's pretty easy to do for many people. On the other side, Kafka Streams is Java code. So I've seen many Java developers which prefer Kafka Streams, even for simple things, because they write Java code day by day, then that's totally fine. However, some others say, well, I use Java where I want to use it and where I have to do complex, customized things. But for the simple things, even I, as Java developer, can do it with KSQL easily. On the other side, the main reason why Confluent has also built KSQL is that everybody who is not a Java developer can use it. And that's really huge, because you can write stream processing with SQL commands. And that can be either a Python developer or a .NET developer and integrate it even into their application, or it can be more a data engineer, which typically uses graphical tools or something like this, or a Jupyter notebook. All of them can use this, because KSQL also has a REST API, so you can integrate it everywhere. And what you see here also is what I said, if you write a Java client application, in most cases, you get huge benefit out of Kafka Streams instead of Kafka clients. So I would really always evaluate, do you really use only the Kafka Java client, or instead use Kafka Streams, which brings you so many things out of the box, but it's not more overhead, it's just a Java library to add. So here's a comparison of both on a high level. In summary, the point is really KSQL is for writing SQL commands, which are pretty easy to do. You also have user-defined functions, so you can do customized stuff, but it's more for the, let's say, 80-20 rule, for the more simpler things. The 20% of the very complex stuff, that's the things you have to write code, and often then a Java framework or so is the better solution for that. So it simply has much higher flexibility, which comes with the burden of writing more code, and for many people it's more complex. So from a perspective, what should you use in the beginning? If you're new to stream processing, there is nothing easier than just getting started with KSQL. If you go to the KSQL website, to the GitHub page, the getting started guide, it's 20 minutes, and what I show in the demo is also similar to that. Even if you've never done stream processing or even Kafka, you can get that running, either in a Docker container in the demo or locally on the laptop, like I do it here in a command line. It's so easy to do, and you can get really great things out of that. On the other side, Kafka Streams, it's for the Java coders, it's for the experts, it's if you want to customize things, or if you simply want to write code for whatever reason, instead of writing SQL commands. So that's the high-level overview, and I will now go also into more detail here. Let's first take a look in more detail about KSQL. So this is a KSQL query. It creates a query where you continuously process data. And the point is really this is the query which you then also deploy to production. This is not just for playing around or debugging or analyzing things that can be used for it, but it's meant for production usage at scale. So you can scale it to different servers. I will show that in a minute. And it's just Kafka under the hood. So you can use it for millions of messages per second and on tens of clients to scale it up and down with all the features of Kafka, replication, high availability, exactly one semantics. That's all built in here into this kind of simple query. You can use it from everywhere. For example, Confluent provides a UI for that with code completion and so on. You can just use it from command line like I will do in a demo. You have a REST interface, so you can really integrate it into anything. For example, I often have shown it also in a Jupyter notebook, more for the data scientist kind of people, so that they can combine that with other things like for building analytic models or so. And then that's more or less for interactive analysis, for development, for debugging of Kafka topics. And then you can also deploy to production. That's typically done in headless mode, so that you deploy it and cannot change it afterwards. You can just then kill it and start a new instance, like in a Docker container. And so now here is a little bit of the difference also to things like Spark or Flink. So with KSQL or also then with Kafka Streams, you write one application and deploy it and run it completely independent from everything else. So if you have 5 KSQL applications, it's 5 different processes running in your Kubernetes cluster or something like this. If you have something like Spark or Flink, you typically have 1 big data cluster, and you deploy all your applications there on this one cluster. And then you have to think about who gets which resources and how do we do a version upgrade and all these kind of things. Here you're completely decoupled from the others. So especially if you want to build decoupled microservices, then probably something like Kafka Streams or KSQL is the easier choice for that from operations perspective and so on, because you focus on your application and don't care about the 10 others. However, for example, of course, if you want to send all the data to a cluster and process it together, then something like Spark or Flink is better for that because you ingest all the data and process it there together. So that's a little bit the separation. Often KSQL or Kafka Streams or Kafka applications in general are built used for applications or microservices, while Flink or Spark are really great for doing the big data analytics all together to find insights with, I don't know, MapReduce or whatever more real-time thing you use for that. Here's a few examples. As I said, you can use it for very simple things like streaming ETL where you filter. In this case, we use a join, so we have a click stream and a user, and we do a join on that. And this is a continuous process which runs until you stop it. It's like a Kafka application. It consumes data forever, aggregates it with other data, and sends the result of that, like in this, the filtered data to another Kafka topic. And there, any other consumer can then use the data. On the other side, you can also do very technical things. And that's also interesting because for these kind of things, you have to do that with code or with command line interface. It sometimes creates real headaches for people. So, for example, you can, with a one-liner, you can change your format from JSON to AFRO, for example. So if you have a Kafka topic which has JSON data, and you also want to get that into AFRO for whatever reason, it's a one-liner in Kafka Streams or in KSQL instead of writing code or something like this. Or changing number of partitions or these kind of things. So that's pretty easy to do. And then here is an example for real-time monitoring applications. So when you get millions of syslog input, and then you, for example, do also filter again, and then this result goes again to a Kafka topic. So from there, any consumer can be a real-time GUI or an alerting system or something like that. And again, this example here on the left side, it says syslog and sensor, IoT, and so on. This query can be deployed to production for millions of messages at scale in a reliable way. Because it's just Kafka under the hood, nothing else. And then it's important, really, this is not just for stateless and hello world stuff or so, or streaming ETL. You can also build real applications and also stateful things. And here's an example of how you would build a tumbling window, so a window with state, where you always take a look at the last 5 seconds. And if within 5 seconds in this hello world example, for one credit card number, there are more than 3 payments, then you send an alert to another Kafka topic so that you get the fraud detection or so. Again, this is hello world here. In the real world, the business logic would be more complex. And even I have seen examples where under the hood you could write a user-defined function where you apply an analytic model. I have a demo for that. A developer builds the UDF once, embeds the model there, and the end user here, he doesn't know what's happening under the hood, but he can build these queries on top of that. So after a few examples, here's now the other big point, and that's true for both Kafka Streams and KSQL. I said before, of course, Kafka Streams, or Kafka is streaming data, but Kafka Streams and KSQL also support the concept of a table. So that means when you have streaming data, you can use a table to do things like aggregation or store more static data. Like in a customer table, you would have the username, the email address, the phone number, and so on. This data changes not often. So this is not really a stream, but more like a table in an Oracle database. Or also a materialized view of the stream. On the other side, and that's important because under the hood, even the table is a Kafka topic. And that sounds confusing to many people in the beginning, so it's also hard to explain that in a minute or so. But the point is also, the table is also a Kafka topic, and so a consumer can also consume from the table. And so if something changes in the table, like let's say the email address changes here, this is also pushed out again because it's a Kafka topic. So you get changed data capture from this table under the hood. And here's another picture which explains this in another view. You have a stream on the data on the left side. LS1 is the first message. So in the table you have one row, which is LS1. Then you get Charlie1, which is a second row. And then when you get Alice, which is the key here, you get LS2, which is the value. Then it updates the other value, right? So you still have just two rows. And then Bob1 is the third row. So you really have the concept of a, like you know it from a SQL database, of a table as first class construct in Kafka Streams and KSQL. And with that, you really have to think about if you build microservices or other applications, it's not always true, but you always should ask the questions, do I need another external database? Or is this sufficient for me? Because this is highly available, this is reliable, this stores the data both in the local application and on the Kafka topic. So sometimes you need another database. So KSQL is not like an Oracle database where you can do very complex joins and queries, and it's not doing indices of the data. So it's not for everything, but for many applications it's good enough so that it's also for long-term storage here and for high availability. So now I talked a lot. Now I want to show a 5-minute demo or so of how that looks like so that you get a better feeling about KSQL. So everything I have done here, let me clear that stuff. The only thing what I have done here already is I have already started conflict local status. I've already started my Kafka cluster here. This is local. I have a zookeeper running, I have a Kafka running, and I have a KSQL server running so that we can here simply play around locally. What I will do, I have a GitHub example which is really doing this step by step. This is more or less similar to also the KSQL tutorial which you found on the KSQL GitHub page. And the first thing, I also now need some test data. And that's another important thing. So even if you don't want to use KSQL for whatever, but for development you need a streaming test data, you can use the KSQL data generator. You can either use that as command line script like I use it here. This has configured data. Here I use clickstream data with a user and a stream. But you can configure it, I think it's JSON or YAML or something like this, to configure it to create any kind of test streaming data. And you can either use that from command line in a script, or even we have a Kafka Connect connector for that. So that's huge for testing, for playing around and all these things if you need streaming data. Even if you don't want to use KSQL for anything else. And so what I'm doing here is I'm just starting data for the user at the top, which is more or less the table data, and I have the clickstream data for these users. So that's the continuous streams, which are simulating data feeds in the background. And now I will use my KSQL command line interface. This is what I use now for interactive analysis, debugging, development from command line, from UI, from REST interface. And here now I can type my queries, list topics, for example. So this is Kafka under the hood. So if I list topics, I see what topics are in this Kafka cluster right now. So also, if you don't want to use KSQL for building new applications, more and more people use it for debugging and monitoring their existing Kafka cluster. It's separated from that, right? But you can debug it. You can, for example, take a look at a specific topic. I don't know how many customers I talked to which still use the Kafka consumer, right, on the command line to debug their Kafka topic. Then with this, it's much easier because you can take a much deeper look with queries into all your data without any other disadvantage. So you can also pretty easily take a look at the data with the print command if you want. But now I will focus on the really powerful stuff. I create a new stream, a stream of the page views, which is the clickstream data. In this example here, it's delimited data, so comma separated. So I have to configure the structure in the beginning once. And so here you see it's related to the page views Kafka topic. And once the stream is created, I can query it. So here I can query it. Like you know from a normal Oracle database, I select the page ID and user ID from this. And what's very important, here you see a limit of 10. Because typically, It's not just built for doing analysis and interactive queries, which you can use it for. But the main idea is that you use these queries for deployment and production so that they run 24/7 at scale. It's just a Kafka application for scale for 24/7 deployments. So this runs forever like any other Kafka application until you kill it. And then the same is true for the table. Now here we are creating a table. The table, as I explained, it's also a Kafka topic under the hood. In this case, I'm using now JSON. So I also have to define the structure here once, how it makes sense. And then I can also query it. The key difference here now, and that's probably what you might also think about later a little bit more, is that here when I do a select, it always just gets me the updated information. So it's still a stream of data. Right, so you get the update information, but if I run it maybe in a few seconds, the updated value for some of these changes. So if I run it again, so here now we might get for the same user ID, here like 9, this might now be different values. So you see here, the value for the region changed. In a stream, you get all the events. In the table, just the most updated version of that. And that's a first-class construct in Kafka Streams and KSQL. So and under the hood, it stores it, as I said, in Kafka topics. So that's on your Kafka cluster. So even if your application goes down, the data is not lost. And on the client side, you can configure how you store the data. You can either store it just in memory. By default, it also stores it on the local disk in RocksDB in the key value store. And you can even add any extended storage there if you want to use something else. Is there a question?
Oh, yeah.
By default, it's from now, but you can configure that. So you can also say here, for example, here I have a few examples. You see here, I can also set offset to earliest, for example, and then it starts from the beginning. And
is that usually a thing people do to use KSQL to scan the old data as well?
I will cover that in a little bit more detail later, but that's the different options you have, and that's depending on your use case. So, as I said, the main idea is to really deploy to production to continuously process real-time data. But on the other side, in Kafka, we see more and more use cases in general where people want to take a look at historical data, because the beauty of Kafka is that you can consume it event by event. So if you first store it in a S3 storage, then if you want to get the event-based structure back, you have to do something with that. And therefore, many people use Kafka in general to consume old data again, and therefore KSQL is perfect then, of course, because you can simply say, get me all data from September 2018 or so, and consume it event-based. And so, you could also now, as you see, this is just Kafka, so you could also use any other client or consumer to get the same data. And here now you see an example. I know it's a very small screen. Here you can also do a join of different of these. You could join this table with this stream and get the combination out of that. And as I said, it supports late arriving data and sliding windows and all these things. And one last thing which is very important, what I first showed you was JSON and delimited data. There you first once have to configure the structure in the stream because it doesn't know it. If you use Afro, which is used in many Kafka projects, then it automatically inherits the data, so you don't even have to configure it once. So that's a huge one of the advantages of using Afro in Kafka environments. So this was just a short demo. As I said, if you go to GitHub of KSQL, you're getting started. It's 20 to 30 minutes. You can try that out. Even if you've never used Kafka and streaming before, it's pretty easy to do. So now I have two more things about what's coming here. So as I said, Kafka, it's a community project on GitHub. You can contribute it, you can change the code, whatever. And what it also has, it has KLIPS, which is not Kafka improvement proposals, but KSQL improvement proposals, and which we are working on with the community. And here is two which I want to show you, which are coming later this year, which make it even cooler or easier to use or for different use cases. So one is that we will also embed Kafka Connect into KSQL query. So here you see it's very small here, I know. But in the end, the idea is that you write KSQL queries and automatically can integrate to Kafka Connect sources and things. So with that, you can easily also do the integration part with KSQL commands, right? So you, for example, configure here a new connection to a MySQL database or to Elasticsearch or IBM MQ or whatever. And you typically do that with Kafka Connect and its REST interface, which is simply another interface to use. You can do all of that interactively here with the KSQL commands in the future. And that's also coming in Q4 this year. And you can also read the status. This is open source. You can discuss there. You can contribute all these things. And the second part, and that's also part for your question, what's also coming later this year is interactive queries, or also known as point-in-time queries. Because what I showed you today is still that typically a query runs continuously, and you have to do limit 10 that you only get 10 results. This will get much more advanced, that you can, for example, do the thing you asked for, like taking a look at historical data without any workarounds or something like this. And so even under the hood, what one of my colleagues implemented in an alpha version is a JDBC driver, so that then you could even get the traditional tools like Tableau on top of Kafka easily. Right? It doesn't make sense for every use case because Kafka is large-scale streaming data, but still we see so much demand for people which want to use the traditional BI tools and so on to query the data somehow. And that's in the end the main idea of what we're doing with this, and that's also coming later this year. So, but what's now very important also, often to many people KSQL looks a little bit like playing around and doing some queries. The point is, so therefore I mention it again and again, this is Kafka under the hood. And therefore, all the things you know from Kafka, it's true for KSQL and Kafka streams. So, for example, fault tolerance. If you have an application running, it always backs it up in a Kafka topic. So even if your application goes down, it's not a problem because either you have parallel instances running or if you have just one, it's stored in Kafka. So as soon as you start a new application in another Docker container or whatever, it starts consuming from where the application stopped before. With consumer offsets. That's all the concepts you know from any Kafka application. The same is true for KSQL. The same is true for fault tolerance. So if you have a cluster of three applications running, which in parallel process from the same topic in different partitions. So if one of these goes down, then that's normal rebalancing and consumer group stuff. Everything you know from Kafka, that's the same what is true here for KSQL too. And then you can start the instance again or another instance. That's normal Kafka rebalancing stuff in consumer group, offsets and all these things. Right? And the last part is also elastic, like any other Kafka application. You can add additional clients. Like, for example, if you have your e-commerce application and it's Christmas time and you know, well, now I scale up from two applications to five and after Christmas back to two or so. Or even use automatic scaling for that, if you have more fancy stuff. So that's all possible. It's just Kafka under the hood. So how do you deploy that? The first important thing again, this stuff is not running on the Kafka broker because the Kafka broker is the dump thing in the middle. That's how Kafka is designed and how it works well and scales well and so on. So the KSQL server is a Java process like any other Kafka client. That's important to understand. That's a good thing because you can run it everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's bare metal, Docker, cloud, whatever. It's just a Java process. And if you have different, if you want to scale it up, it's, for example, three processes running in three Docker container in Kubernetes. And the huge thing here again is that these applications are separated from each other. That's very different from Spark or Flink, where you have one big data cluster and run all the different applications in one cluster. Here it's all separated. That might be good or bad. That's what you have to decide. So I've heard people which said, well, I prefer to have one operator of all these things, then yes, then you have something like Spark or Flink where you have one cluster and one person operates and monitors everything. On the other side, as more and more people go to Kubernetes and these tools, and there you also have this out-of-the-box under the hood, and but still have separated teams which can work on their own application and scale it and maintain it, version it, completely decoupled from the other ones because it's each its own cluster. And then regarding monitoring, that's just Kafka application. So either use a tool like our control center for that, or JMX monitoring, or you build your own Grafana dashboard or whatever. So that's an overview about Kafka Stream. So I also want to talk a little bit about KSQL. I want to know a little bit about Kafka Streams. Kafka Streams, as I said, it's coding. So either Java or Scala. And this is the pro or con. That's what you totally have to decide by yourself. The concepts are more or less exactly the same, which I described just for KSQL. So I will cover more the differences. The same is, it's still its own application which you build. Compare it also again to Flink or Spark. It's running separately by its other. But the main point what's different now from KSQL is that here it's an application. And actually it's not a server like KSQL, but it's just a library. It's a char file. And you embed that into your application which you build. So here we have an example with a Maven dependency. So you just add that to your application, whatever else is in that application as dependency. And then you build your application. In the example I show in a minute in the demo, I just have a very simple public static void main Java class or so, which I run in a Docker container and scale it. But you could even have something like a Java EE application or a monolith and embed it, because it's just a library to add there. And that's good or bad, that's what you can decide. The point is, how that works then, is that you develop your application, embed this dependency, and then you use your normal build process like Jenkins and so on to build your application file or binary or whatever and deploy that somewhere. So that's a huge difference. KSQL provides its own server so that you just deploy the SQL queries there. And Kafka Streams is a library, so you have to build your own application somehow, which can be good or bad. Regarding elasticity and scalability and so on, it's the same what I just discussed about for KSQL. It's all Kafka under the hood. So all the things you know from Kafka, it's true for Kafka Streams. And here now you see, in this example, the one team wants to use Kafka Streams and the other team uses KSQL. And the third team maybe deploys everything on Spark. Every team can decide by itself. It's completely decoupled from each other. So let's take a short look at that. I'm simply reusing one of my demos, which I typically show in my machine learning talks. So I will go here to my Kafka machine learning examples. This is a GitHub example where I integrate with different machine learning frameworks like TensorFlow and H2O and so on. But the point is really under the hood, it's just loosely coupled Kafka Streams applications. And so here I also, you see, if I build it, I use Maven to build my char file. And now I have already built it, so I just need to create the two topics for that. So this is an airline delay prediction example, where I use an analytic model, but the point is I have an airline input topic which sends input information, and then I do get my prediction out of the Kafka Streams application. So here I have a Kafka topic with input from anywhere else, and then the Kafka Streams application consumes it. It's a consumer. It does the processing logic in real time. In this case, I apply an analytic model, and then in real time it sends the result back to another Kafka topic from where any alerting system or whatever can consume it. So let's take first a look at the code, not in detail, but the point is really, if you take a look at this application here, it in the end has just two dependencies. One is my Kafka Streams dependency, right? So, and the other one is, in this case, I use an analytic model from H2O, so it's another dependency. But the point is, you just need this one dependency to implement stream processing with Kafka. And you always should think about, should I use the normal Kafka client, producer and consumer, or can I use some of the advantages of Kafka Streams instead? Or otherwise, would I build it by myself? Both are a library to add, so here's a huge benefit often under the hood, even from what you think about normal Kafka applications. You don't have to use all of that. And so here it's just a very simple application, and most of the code you see here is documentation. You do some configuration about your structure to get the runtime started here. And here's the streams configuration. So here, for example, you give it the bootstrap servers and the application ID for JMX and so on. And you have the key and value where you define the serialization. Here I just use a string. And then here the magic, the stream processing happens in my stream topology. And this is also pretty simple. And most of this is documentation. You see here the structure of the data. The point is, here what I do in the end, I get a raw data, and then I do a mapping of that so that it fits my analytic model. The model requires a specific data structure, and that's what I do here. That's the work I had to do. And then this line is the magic line where I use my analytic model under the hood to do the prediction. So the row here is the input data from the input Kafka topic which was consumed. Then I do my prediction, and this prediction then is printed and then also returned. And when I return it, it's sent to the other Kafka topic, to the output Kafka topic. And from there, the rest of the world can consume it in real time or in batch. And that's the application. And this application, again, you build it to a char file. So I have here used Maven to build a very simple char file here. So it's a, as you see here. And as soon as I start it, now I do it locally. You can do it in a Docker container or anywhere else. And then it starts in a second or so, and then you can use it. It's highly available and scalable. I just use one instance here, but you could also do starting 5 instances. All the failover and the parallelization, that's happening under the hood. That's not what you have to configure, because it's using Kafka and partitions and so on under the hood. And so now I have the application running, and so if I use first a consumer which is waiting for the data, you see this is consuming from the output topic, so this is waiting for predictions. And now as soon as I send input data, so this is some test data for one event which I sent in, and as soon as I send it to the airline input topic, as soon as I click really in real time, it processes the data and sends it to the output topic. And this is in the end continuous stream processing from the consumer to Kafka streams to the output topic. So it's really pretty easy to do. And pretty lightweight. So this is an application you can deploy with a few megs of memory and so on. And you can run it everywhere. You don't need another big data cluster to manage. And even if you want to scale it up and highly available, you start 3 or 5 instances in 5 Java processes somewhere. The high availability, the failover, Kafka takes for this, right? Kafka manages this. So no other big data management tool or cluster is needed. So with that, I'm almost done. So the point, what I just want to highlight now, I talked a little bit about stream processing and the challenges and what's the difference between Kafka streams and KSQL. We see that many people which are new to that really are in a pain with it because it's so much different from request response and databases and web services. So this is more like what we call a maturity curve where people go with stream processing. And the point is really you can do that step by step. And that's the good thing again about being decoupled from each other, because one person still does request response or web services if he needs to or doesn't understand stream processing, but you want to do your innovative new stream processing project. And the great thing about Kafka is that it's all decoupled this way. So everybody can decide how to do that. So some people might use Kafka Connect for integration. Some might still use their existing application, which might be a legacy tool or whatever, right? Or you write just a Python client, and the other ones then who are new and want to start something cool, they start a new application with Kafka Streams or KSQL. So it's completely separated from each other, and that's really the huge difference. If you also take a look at Flink or Spark, which also provides stream processing with trade-offs, with pros and with cons. That depends on what you want to do. But the point here with KSQL and Kafka Streams, you build just your application completely separate from each other. And that's more or less my conclusion here also for the comparison with the others. That's the trade-off. It's good or bad, but it's completely separated from each other. And if you use Spark or Flink, where typically also it's connected to Kafka because large scale and high throughput and so on. So there you ingest data into Flink or Spark, do the processing, and send the information then back to Kafka, the result. It has all its trade-offs, but that's in the end the difference between these concepts. And so I hope that was a good overview about Kafka Streams and KSQL, and you get a little bit of feeling about how both work and also how they differ from Flink and Spark streaming. And so then now I have around 5 minutes for questions. Let's first start here.
Yeah, So for KSQL or KSQL, is there any method of writing custom deserializers if the data is not in any of the specific data types that you mentioned?
Yeah, so the question is about the normal data formats are AFRO or CSV or so or JSON. So yes, that's possible. And as I said, so this is on GitHub and this is for all available. And even our plan is to add more, so like protobuf and these kind of things. But that's definitely possible. And if anyone is writing that, also if it's a PR, it's even better because then you can contribute it back and we can improve and support it. But that's definitely possible and already.
Sort of similar. You mentioned that there's a way for you to tell the KSQL whatever schema to use.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the SQL statement, or is
yes.
that configured somewhere else?
It's in a SQL statement typically. So for CSV or for JSON, you define it in the when you create a stream. So not when you do the queries, but first you have to create a stream or table, and that's where you do it. So it's like for SQL database for Oracle, you first create a table once, and there you define it, and then in the queries you don't have to define it again because then it knows it. The difference here is, and that's the cool thing about AFRO here. With AFRO, it automatically infers it already because AFRO has the structure already built in there. So that's provided by the tooling then. So if you have that choice, AFRO makes it much easier for you for that.
Do you support schema registry?
Yes, it's supported out of the box already, so yes.
Do you have a comment and a question? So the comment is, just like Kafka streams, you can also use Flink, separate app for each cluster, and you don't have to have
mm-hmm.
one multi-tenant cluster.
Mm-hmm.
The question around is, you're talking about joins in KSQL. So if you are joining two streams, one is a fast stream, one is a slow stream,
mm-hmm.
How do you like manage the buffering of it and state management of it in the streams?
Yeah. So the question was about streams. When you have a fast stream and a slow stream, how do you manage that and the late arrivals and so on? So that's the things how I'm not too deep dive into that, to be honest. So, but you can configure things like how long you want to wait, and I think it's called late arrival and so on. So that's the idea. So if you have one stream coming in, you can say, okay, for the next 1 hour or so you wait, and if until then something comes from the other side, then you join it. And otherwise, I think you can configure left join, inner join, and all these things, so you can decide how to go on with that data.
So is the data held in memory?
Yes, in memory or on disk. So that's a good question also, because that's also important. In the biggest thing what people can do wrong in Kafka streams or KSQL is if you use joins and use them the wrong way, because then you can ask for a lot of memory usage and also buffering and all these things. So I, as I said, I'm not an expert here, but what I know from our support teams is that this is where most people struggle with, because it's hard to understand sometimes for complex use cases, and that's where you need help often to get it optimized the right way, because if you do joins the wrong way, you needed a lot of memory and so on. But it can also be stored to disk, so with RocksDB and so on. And so it's even not a problem, and we have use cases where you do sliding windows over many days or so. But that really depends on the use case and how you configure it then.
So if you have a KSQL table, and let's say the node which was running that dies, does the new node need to be able to go and send a message to come to that state, or is the state keep it as?
Yeah, so if a application dies, no matter if it's a stream or a table, it's under the hood, the key thing is the Kafka topic and the offset. So it exactly knows where it was before, and so it synchronizes back with Kafka. So you will always get in the state which you were before. So you will not lose any data even if the client is down. Okay, let me just check the time, because unfortunately I have another talk at 10 o'clock upstairs, but I have 2 more minutes, so let's do a few more.
So for KSQL, like a simple select statement, how does that work under the hood in terms of, does it write to another Kafka topic? If someone wanted to consume from that SQL statement, how does that work?
So how does the SQL statement work under the hood? Under the hood, technically, it's a Kafka Streams engine. So I don't know how it translates to Kafka Streams, but it's Kafka Streams. And therefore, it's continuously processing the data. If you're using it continuously, it does not query the data when you ask, but it continuously queries the data and aggregates it. However, if you use, for example, a timestamp from beginning, then it queries from that Kafka topic from the beginning. So that's like any other Kafka consumer. So it's the same concept like for any Kafka consumer or client.
But if I wanted to subscribe to that
mm-hmm.
SQL, how would I know where it's publishing it?
I mean, you always consume from a Kafka topic and produce another Kafka topic. So if you're consuming to it, it pushes it in real time as soon as your client consumes it. Okay.
This might be a longer answer. A lot of deployments of Kafka today use CDCM to initiate messages. And that's table by table, normally bolts and piece systems. A lot of what's being wanted for event-driven architecture is business messages and not the fractions, the pieces of CDC.
Yeah.
How do you see the trade-off and what is the preferred approach to unite those CDC table fragments together to go and not go that amount or something else to move for event-driven architecture?
Yeah. So that's also a good question. So that often it's legacy change data capture from mainframes or from databases or whatever. You push it into Kafka and how to get the business logic out of that. That's definitely a challenge. Often the challenge is also the other way around. So we've seen many customers, for example, having a SAP business warehouse where actually there is business logic in there. That's even harder. Because if you just have technical information and push it to Kafka, then people aggregate it somewhere, either in a Kafka Streams application or they just push it through Kafka to another application where it's aggregated. On the other side, if it's business coming in, then it's harder. But what we see really is if it's just the tables pushed out from the mainframes, for example, then they build new applications to aggregate it, often with Kafka Streams or so. However, that's not easy, and especially, that's still the main reason why many people use, for example, legacy integration more for offloading. I will talk about that in the next talk in 10 minutes, a little bit. But offloading is easy, but aggregating it again is harder. So for these legacy applications like mainframe, we see that people push it with change data capture or Kafka for the main reason to consume it from there for other applications. But they are not rebuilding the old stuff. Over time, they replace it with completely new implementations because it's not really possible. Because nobody understands the old logic in mainframes and often legacy, that's the problem, or triggers in Oracle databases. I'm sorry, I really have to go now upstairs because I have another talk in 10 minutes. You can also join me there about Kafka versus ETL and ESB. And if you have any questions, I'm also there after that talk then. And thanks for coming.